From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Not often do I get a chance to have two of the Justice Interrupted gals on the show at one time, but tonight we have Stacey Dietrich. You know her as a police officer, author, and of course Robin Sachs as a weekly contributor to this program, a former DA and author and television commentator in her own right. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Now, Stacey, we might lose you because you're in some a bad weather pattern, but that's let's just hope that that weather pattern holds its own. Now, gals, you two do your own share of media. You have your Justice Interrupted radio program. You've both been on the show many times. What we want to talk about tonight is we want to get into the Cambridge issue, the sergeant, professor, the president, hell, everyone that's involved in this thing. And then we'll get into Michael Jackson a little bit later and all the wackiness that's been going on in the media. But I want to start with you, Stacey. Longtime police officer, you know, when you strap your gun on and you grab your duty bag and your keys for your cruiser and you go out and you start taking your calls, you never expect to get a call the way that the sergeant did the other day. In fact, when I'm out with the young folks, I always tell them to expect the unexpected. But boy, did this guy get a call of a lifetime. In fact, he got to have a beer with the president. Tell us your thoughts on the whole Cambridge issue.
Actually, Dana, I have been in that position many times over. Of course, I have not been invited to the White House to have a beer, but the characteristics of the situation are similar. So as far as I blogged on this, just so you know, it's going to be posted on Monday on Women in Crime, Inc., and I kind of let it rip that I don't believe this is an issue of race.
No.
What I see this is an issue of social class, and I've run into this many times myself where, you get what Dr. Gates would consider a paranoid neighbor calling. And here, lo and behold, I use myself as an example. I respond to that call. I'm just doing my job. The door opens, and I am subjected to a verbal tirade and annihilation like you've never heard in your life from a doctor, a lawyer, a professor, a businessman, basically saying, you're a piece of garbage. Get away from my house. And I've actually encountered that many times. There have been several times where I have actually made an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about the Cambridge Police Department, and this is one thing I touched on my blog, was they did him a favor, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. with a disorderly conduct charge, because they could have, at least in my opinion, here in the state of Ohio, we have something what's called obstructing official business,
yeah.
which is hindering, impeding the job of a police officer, period, meaning you can't do their job. And it's my understanding that they were letting Dr. Gates go. They said, okay, we're leaving. He continues to follow them out, continues to berate them. They say, again, go back in your house. You're causing a disturbance. He doesn't want to hear that. He keeps coming after them. They arrest him at that point for disorderly conduct, which is basically causing annoyance or hindrance to any person. And I think they could have taken a step further, and they didn't. And, you know, to, again, pull the race card on this whole thing just makes me very angry. Again, I don't think it's about race. I think it's about social class.
Yeah, I agree with you. Robin Sachs, ADA, or former ADA out of Los Angeles County. I'll get that right yet. Someone who's been around for a while and seen plenty of these cases. I agree with Stacy. You know, obstruction, you name it, you can look at different things here. Some of the, I call them the yuppie talking heads on TV, and you don't fall into that category, ma'am, say that the Dr. Gates was only expressing his entitled freedom of speech rights, that he could sit there and berate the police officer as much as he wanted, and the police officer was totally wrong to make an arrest. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, first of all, when we analyze a case such as this, there, and what I love and about you, Dana, is you give me a little bit of a heads up on what the talking issue was for this week's stories, and you said we were going to cover this case, and in the email you said, now, Stacey, you're going to be the police officer, and Robin, you're going to be the lawyer. So
all right.
We're going to talk Robin the lawyer, and then we can talk Robin the person, if you will. First of all, Robin the lawyer prosecutor, who would be, you know, a DA, and the question is, would I want to be the DA that has to take this case to trial, say it was out on its thoughts and so forth? And the fact of the matter is whether we like to admit it, whether we agree with it or not, whether it's whatever our personal beliefs are, anything else, which I will sound off in a minute, the fact is that a jury is not going to like and get very inflamed and passionate whether there has anything that has the aura of racism in it.
No.
Now, having said that, I totally personally agree with both of what you guys are saying. This is not a race case. Hell, if I were to say to a cop, you know, what are you doing? You know, aren't you familiar with Jewish America or whatever? They'd probably arrest me too, but I wouldn't have NAACP helping me out throughout the whole thing. So I think that, you know, these kinds of things happen. If someone talks back to a police officer, they're going to have to expect to suffer the consequences. We are supposed to respect our authorities, and you act and conduct yourself in such a way. And when someone acts in a way that appears aggressive and makes statements, that person will then have to deal with whatever consequences come from that. But we can't, just like we can't take the celebrity out of a celebrity case, just like we can't look at Michael Jackson, which we'll talk, I'm sure you're going to talk about later on,
yep.
You can't say, are we handling this case any different than we would any other case? And, you know, we've talked about it with every other celebrity case that's out there. The fact is you can't take someone who is, you know, one of the most prominent African-American Harvard professors who makes a comment about racism and then has the benefit of the President of the United States echoing those comments. I mean, what do you do with that?
Yeah, exactly. Robin Sachs and Stacey Dietrich are here, and we're talking Cambridge. Stacey, I don't know if you've seen the commercial. I know you don't watch much television, but there's a commercial that airs up here quite a bit on the Comedy Channel. It's Sarah Silverman, and she's pulled over by this trooper, and he walks up to her car.
That's all you have to say.
he pulls up, but it's comical,
Sarah
though.
Sarah Silverman, that's all you have to say.
I know. I agree with you, but it is funny. He pulls up to her, and he's got the aviator glasses on and the trooper hat, and he looks into the car, and he says, do you know why I'm here today? And she looks up at him, and she says, you got all C's in high school? So I thought,
oh my God. That's terrible.
I thought, yeah, it is terrible, but I thought it was funny too. And I
said that actually, that's hysterical. And you know, the funny thing, and Robin touched on this. She said, you know, we know not to talk back to police officers. Well, the bottom line is, talking back to a police officer technically is not against the law.
No.
And, you know, I could be driving in my cruiser any given time of any day, have someone drive by and flip me off. That, in fact, is not a violation of law, at least here in Ohio. There is nothing I can do legally against that person. That is not disorderly conduct. I cannot be considered a victim of disorderly as far as being offended, annoyed, or alarmed because I'm held to a higher standard. So what Dr. Gates did, the problem they had there was you have this crowd gathered out front of John Q. citizens as the police officers are exiting the house, and Dr. Gates is following the officers outside of the home in this obscenity-laced tirade, and which all these John Q. citizens can hear. And at that point, that is when he becomes a violation of disorderly conduct. And let me add, probably his biggest downfall was when they arrived and said, look, we have this call of forced entry, possibly a burglary in progress. Can you provide an identification? Which, you know, Dana, is standard in every call we handle.
Yep.
We first thing we do is we have to have identification. And the first words out of his mouth is, why? Because I'm a black man in America. And he refuses to provide the identification to prove that he, in fact, is the resident of that house. And right there, he is guilty of obstructing official business, which here is a second-degree misdemeanor, as opposed to a minor misdemeanor disorderly conduct, which is what they initially charged him with.
You know, you talk, Stacey, I'll get to Robin in a second, you talk about flipping off a police officer, and that's fine. But I personally, as a supervisor, had complaints brought to me about officers who, yeah, they might have been flipped off the first time, but then they returned the favor and gave the finger right back to the person. And when you talk about the higher standard, then police officers truly are held to a higher standard because not only do they...
If you have a department that okays that, then your department has got the biggest set of steel balls I've ever seen in law enforcement. And I love that. Don't get me wrong. But most departments are like, oh my God, you can't do that. You have to let them flip you off. Which, as a police officer, you know you're out there patrolling and you're pulling up to a stoplight and, you know, just doing your job and, you know, maybe on the phone talking to your kid about doing spelling tests. You turn around and there's this guy there that you've arrested for burglaries and robberies, and he's got his middle finger up. I mean, and you can't do a thing about that.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to kind of smile, wave, and move on. And it's very, you have to give officers quite a bit of credit for being able to kind of move past that.
Robin, did the officer Crowley, did he take it too far? Like the media is saying, you know, you're getting berated, you're getting called down, you're getting your buttons pushed, some people will say. How long should a police officer stand there and take it? Or should the police officer just make the arrest and keep his own or her own mouth shut?
Well, I mean, I think that, again, these aren't issues of race. These are issues of manners, of how we conduct ourselves in and how we relate to other people. And as we know, times are a-changing these days. People don't have the manners and courtesy that people, that we would expect people to have. Now, of course, as Stacey mentions, it is not a crime to, you know, to say, I hate you, Mr. Police Officer, and it's not a crime, you know, but yet it would be probably a violation of the police officer's personnel duties and the internal structure of the police agency to be, you know, to treat citizens under their, you know, codes and duties to be able to do it under a certain way. But I guess the fact is, you know, what are people trying to prove? Aren't there enough issues for us to make issues out of, so as to not turn everything into either a race issue or an issue that there needs to be a stand one way or another? And I guess it's about people being grown-ups all around. Yes, you know, I think police officers are, you know, there's a certain amount of crap that they have to expect to take given the fact that that's the job and that's the job that they do, and especially if people are, you know, you give a little bit of leeway to the people who are under the influence and screwed up so that they don't have necessarily control of their faculties as much as other cases, but that's not the case here. This wasn't an intoxication drug situation where someone's behavior was altered due to other medication, and there was no reason that the professor should have turned, you know, he turned up the volume on his own case unnecessarily, and it kind of goes against his really bad business skills. I mean, it's like someone who's in a board meeting and trying to get a big executive deal closed and throws a hissy fit temper tantrum. How does that get anything? I mean, any business book isn't going to say, you know, how to make friends and influence people, you know, start playing the race card. It just doesn't really work, and vice versa on the police officer as well. If you're trying to effectuate a an arrest and to do what you needed to do, and you really want to not buy into that race issue, then don't buy into it. And someone has to be the bigger person. And some of the stuff is pissy matched up. And I don't, you know, I'm not pointing fingers, but I think that the fact is that people are disrespectful of the system, period. And when people are disrespectful of the system, it sends other messages, especially you have a professor who is sitting here in a position of authority, but he's a role model, he's a successful African-American man who is an academic, an author, a speaker. I mean, he's got all these credentials behind him, and this is the nonsense. See, is the way that we treat our, you know, badge-carrying people who protect our very own safety. Give me a break.
Robin Sachs and Stacey Dietrich are here, and we're talking Cambridge. We're going to take a quick break. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Stacey Dietrich and Robin Sachs are here. We're talking Cambridge. We're going to talk Jackson a little bit. Stacey, you've written a book about bad cops, I guess, for lack of a better term. Let's talk about it for a minute.
Yes, I have written which is so funny because I'm such the defender of all of law enforcement, and I ended up writing this book, which is called Murder Behind the Badge, True Stories of Cops Who Kill. And it is these, you know, just these small handful that go off the deep end and actually commit acts of brutal murder. And we've got Drew Peterson and Bobby Cutts and my own case of a lieutenant I grew up with, Charles Oswald, who got a prostitute impregnated and killed her in his cruiser and dumped her body in a remote region down by my home.
Yikes.
just 18 stories of just some crazy stories of cops that went off the deep end that should actually, and I touch on this in the book, they should not have been hired in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in touching on the subject of James Crowley, he was an amazing sergeant. He taught cultural sensitivity. He taught race relations. So he is so far from these types of cops. I think that Dr. Gates wasn't aware of the battle he was picking when he started this whole thing.
You know, and I think it has a lot to do with the sergeant, and it has a lot to do with police officers in general, Robin. But as soon as the president, who seems to, if he hasn't got it written on a teleprompter in front of him, he has trouble with it, you know, talking about health care and then admitting he hasn't read the bill or bringing up something.
Oh, come on, we all have trouble without a teleprompter, darn it.
You know, and without that, he stumbles, and all of a sudden he stepped into something here that I think even he didn't think would be as important as it is. And in fact, I'll tell a quick story. I'm in my office today, and I have the local talk channel on, and the host is talking about policemen and why policemen are losing respect the way that they are. But really, when it comes down to it, the only stories that we hear about police in the media are the bad stories, the tragic ones like Peterson and Bobby Cutts, or the officer that gets the DUI, or the officer that beats up his wife. And yeah, there are bad ones, but there's a lot of good ones, but we never seem to hear about them.
Yeah, I know, and we've talked about that issue, you know, tons of times on this show as well as on Justice Interrupted. I mean, what people don't recognize, again, it kind of goes back to, you know, the way statistics and numbers are played out there, and it goes back to what makes a good story. And face it, what makes a, you know, what better of a story than, you know, the person who abuses their power, you know, in some way or another versus, you know, the hero police officer who saved somebody's lives or who rescued a kid from an abusive situation, and because that officer stayed there all night and did what was necessary, a kid doesn't end up dead or abused further or all those things. And there are hundreds and hundreds of those cases that happen every day that far, far, far outweigh what we hear in terms of the media. But as I blogged about on a separate issue, I mean, even our trusted sources of information don't, you know, turn non-stories into stories, which is exactly what the president actually did.
Mm-hmm.
in this case. By weighing in, he turned something that wasn't a race issue. He weighed in, he put his fingerprints and put his foot in his mouth, I believe, and even he said that he, you know, it wasn't the best use of words or however he
phrase that afterwards. However, I've seen, you know, we saw the LA Times do it with me personally, where they reported on a story that was not a story. And as we're covering, all of us covering Michael Jackson, we're seeing hundreds of different networks all reporting different things, because when people don't know what they're talking about, they lie.
Yeah.
To make it a story. So it's unfortunate, and it's really, that's why what you do here on Scared Monkeys and what Dana, you do, you know, in your issue of the day, I forgot what you call it exactly, and what Stacey and I do with Susan on Justice Interrupted is to try to do the no spin, no BS, you know, this is the way it is out there, and hope in our small, tiny way we can counterbalance all the sensationalism that's out there.
You know, Stacey, I do a daily commentary every day, and I was talking about a story, a true story with me, at a service station the other day, and I'm talking to the clerk, and I paid for my gas, and of course my teenage kid's there, so I paid for his gas, and the guy that's standing in line, he's laughing, he says, "Why don't you pay for my gas?" And so we're talking, and I walked away, but I forgot that I had had a jug of washer fluid, and I put it in my truck before I came in, so about 2 seconds later, I spun around and went to the till, and I said, "Geez, I forgot to pay for that washer fluid." The thing is, I'm not in my hometown. I'm 2 hours away in another city. And the guy standing beside me, who I've never seen before in my life, but obviously he knew me, he says, "I'll be damned, an honest cop." Now, when you see that and when you hear that, you know, I'd never thought of it much, but and then the talk show today about police officers and respect, and we only hear about the bad ones, but I put some blame on police management, too, because they don't do a very good job of selling what they do to the public, and the only stories that we hear are the bad ones, or am I wrong?
No, and I'm going to throw out here, to me, the most amazing story of my life, which taught me about ethics and morals and policing, was my own father. And you're talking about, you know, times back into the 70s, you know, a young couple with two young kids struggling financially, a cop, you know, my mother was in nursing school. My father goes to a death scene, an elderly man, no family members whatsoever, kind of digging around, finds thousands and thousands of dollars. And this man had suits hanging in his closet, and in each pocket in his suit, he had probably a roll of $1,000 bills, which would have obviously gotten, you know, here's this young cop back in the 70s, gotten his young family out of this financial devastation they were going through. And no one actually, when you know the circumstances, no one would have known if he would have taken that money.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, this is, of course, when I started my career in policing, I encountered a similar situation, and he said, "I'm holding all this money in my hand, and I think, look what this could do for me. Look what this could do, not for me, most importantly, for my kids." And he, you know, he was raised in Catholic schools. He has a good moral fortitude and whatnot, and he said, "I will never be one of those people." He took an evidence bag. It amounted to about $20,000, which in the 70s was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Threw this money in here and logged it into the property room and walked away and said, "You know, I could sleep at night."
I love your dad.
And what's that?
I love your dad.
He is, I'm telling you, he's the most amazing man in the world. And, but, you know, hearing stories like that, and it's just, that's one cop.
Yep.
In one small city in this entire nation. There are so many, many, many cops out there like that.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the media, it's more newsworthy to see these cops that are doing these bad things instead of this cop that, you know, walked into a Domino's Pizza because he was hungry, and there's a guy behind the counter shot 15 times and runs out the store and happens to, at the right moment, see the guy, catch the guy. You know, here the Domino's Court guy had three kids, a wife, he was the sole support. He saved this guy's life, did CPR, whatnot. You do not hear these things, and that just, you know, as a police officer, and Dana, I know you know this, I sit there and I watch the news, and it emotionally affects you.
Sure
it's
does,
very upsetting.
Yep. No.
It's so interesting. I'm sorry to cut in here, but it just, as you were speaking, Stacey, just made me think of something. And it's kind of the reverse of the same issue when you talk about race as well and bad cops and so forth. It's the same reason that people complain that the only missing cases that we ever talk about, or you hear the media ever talk about, rather, are the cases where it's the cute little blonde ones, and you don't hear about the, you know, little African-American child that was missing, or a little Hispanic child. You only hear about the cute blonde ones and the Natalie Holloways and the so forth. And that's true, too, frankly. You know,
you look at the case of Relia Wilson. Relia was a huge Florida case of a missing black 4-year-old that got lost by the system, which is so typical here, and don't even get me started on Children's Services. She got lost. She's dead, and they have yet to find her body. And there has been this huge outpouring of you know, these bloggers and whatnot of this, they want to start a Relia alert, which is more towards the black missing kids that aren't necessarily getting the most attention. And actually, there is some legitimacy to that, because you've got Kaylee and Haley and Sandra, you mm-hmm. know, these middle class, families, and these kids are missing, but they're missing. Oh, I mean, there's like 150 kids per year, 150 that are missing by strangers and ultimately are presumed dead because they're never found again. 150 per year. How many of those do we hear every year? We hear Kaylee, Haley, and Sandra, maybe 3 or 4, but where's the other, you know, 140, 145?
So we hear Bobby Cutts, Drew Peterson. That's exactly my point. You hear Bobby Cutts, Drew Peterson,
this case,
and then you don't hear anything else.
No,
you don't, and I guess it's up to shows like ours here and your guys with Justice Interrupted and the other ones that are out there to use the media that's to our disposal to get the message out. But for both of you, and I'll ask Robin this question, and then Stacey, you can comment. You've both done major media, the cable news shows, and usually you're there on a specific topic, and most recently with Robin, a lot of Michael Jackson. We'll talk about him here in a little bit. What do we do to get those types of shows to focus on more of the other stories, or is that even possible?
Was that a question for me or Stacey?
It's for you, Robin.
Oh, okay. I was just being respectful to my law enforcement friend because I don't want to be disrespectful to her.
I'm like so being quiet when you talk.
No, I wasn't complaining at all. Trust me. I just was trying to show my respect for law enforcement tonight. Just trying to send a message. I say, you know, first of all, one tool that we have at our beck and call that we haven't had and that no other generation has had prior to ours is the benefit of social media and social networking. And these programs that while we may not be the shows that are on at the top of the hour on KBC or NBC or CNN or any other major network or national network or so forth, the people who care about our issues, about crime, about victims, about justice, about doing what's right, about accountability and ethics, those people find us, and those people are our loyal listeners. They're your loyal listeners. They're the people who spend the time to blog. And frankly, they do make a change. Even though it may not feel like it's on a macro level, the whole underworld environment of the bloggers and the people out there who spend the time to listen, comment, write, read, and do everything have the ability to make change. And that's one thing that I think that, you know, people need to continue doing, and not to underestimate the power of their own word and our own ability to participate, even if it's in our own little way by using social media and marketing. And that's the other thing, is passing on the word so people know about these avenues of shows, linking Scared Monkeys to Facebook pages, putting them on your MySpace profile, sending out your emails, throwing newsletters, commenting, and in people who have access to larger mediums, letting those larger mediums know what some of these smaller mediums are doing. I try to you know, alert when I have an opportunity on Huffington Post, because that's sometimes a forum I'm able to blog, you know, I blog for Huffington Post. So if I can find a way to highlight a case, the case of the People versus Ayers, of the doctor in San Mateo that Vicki Balfour was out of that courtroom. That's a case that was all over the small San Mateo papers, but no one knew about it, and we gave it a little bit of a national floor. And I do know for a fact that it had some effect, because the DA of San Mateo County wrote the DA of Los Angeles a letter about me. So, hey, it's working. For better or worse, it's working.
At least they're paying attention. Stacy, you do the same with your radio and your television appearances and stuff. But the types of books that you write, have you ever thought of getting into the to the so-called non-fiction and focusing on a story? I know you did it just with the police officers, but are you planning on doing more of that?
No, actually, I've kind of announced this. I'm under contract right now for the Sandra Cantu case.
Oh, good.
And I will be flying out to San Francisco in 2 weeks to do the research for that. So I had misgivings about the case as far as writing it. You know, you're grappling with the whole moral issue. But that particular case, since this huge message that kind of shatters the stranger danger theories.
Sure.
And I think that's an important message that parents everywhere need to realize, that it's not just strangers, it's people you see every day you need to be wary of. And we're embarking on a whole new age there. So
good.
That's where I'm at right now. And Dana, do I have time to comment on Michael Jackson on something?
Yeah, we're going to, actually I was going to take a quick 3-minute break, come back and get right at Jackson if you want to hold on.
Actually, I do, and I was going to blog on this, but I'm, like, you know, feeling antsy. I have to say something.
Okay, we have Robin Sachs and Stacy Dietrich here. A little bit later on, Alan Magnus will be here to talk about the 21st Annual Crimes Against Children's Conference in Dallas, Texas. We're going to take a quick break. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Yeah, you bet we're back. And Stacy Dietrich, Robin Sachs are here. And Stacy's itching to tell us something about Michael Jackson. Get at it, gal.
No, I'm going to get on my soapbox. I have yet to hear anyone say this, and it really bothers me. And we have, you know, glorified Michael Jackson to this messiah status.
Mm.
And, you know, the common defense in everything negative is that he was not convicted in a court of law of being a child molester.
Mm.
And I just want to remind everyone here that I saw the photos from Neverland. And in Neverland, you've got, you know, a clear-cut case of someone with severe mental illness. And when I say that, I'm talking about the conditions of their home. Not to mention, he had child mannequin stationed throughout the entire mansion.
Yeah.
In various positions. And just because someone was not convicted in a court of law, and this is where people get confused, and this is where the media gets confused, because a pedophile is not convicted in a court of law as a child molester does not mean that they are not a pedophile. And there's a huge difference there. The media has failed to recognize that. And Michael Jackson was, in fact, a pedophile. And just because he was not convicted in court as a child molester does not erase the fact that he had a sexual attraction to children. And that in itself, you know, obviously poses a danger. And I want to remind everyone that every time that the media associates the word OJ with the word murder is, in fact, political incorrectness, if they're going to reflect back on the Michael Jackson case, because OJ was not convicted of murder. You see where I'm going with this?
Yep.
And, you know, if we're going to not call Michael Jackson a child molester, we cannot call OJ a murderer, even though we know that is the case. And that was the only point I was trying to make, that Michael Jackson clearly was a pedophile. He lived his life as a pedophile. He was not convicted in court as a child molester. They are two different things. He was not convicted of actually causing harm to a child, but yet his sexual orientation was towards that of children, which was, in fact, a danger. And I think that no one has actually, kind of keyed in on that fact.
Robin, you've done a ton of media regarding Michael Jackson. And
yeah, she is a Michael Jackson expert. Robin, weigh in.
Yes, let's get you to comment.
Well, way back from day one, and you and I, in our favorite mode of communications, Dana, emailing, mm-hmm. I said, has the world forgotten that this was someone who had two, cases, one that was filed, one that was not, that we know about, where there was child sexual assault? Has, have people forgotten about that? The only, and I think there's a lot of memory lapse when it comes to Michael Jackson and, and how he was seen. And no one's going to ever take away his music genius. Even throughout his child molestation trial, I told you I actually would run on the treadmill listening to Michael Jackson and think that I'm running to one of the biggest child molesters out there as I rant. And the only thing that I take quarrel with what Stacey just said, and everything else I agree with, is that sexual pedophilia is not a sexual orientation. And I think that he thinks that that was his sexual orientation, and that was I think that that was. I don't see it as a sexual orientation. I think you're going
to try. You ask, Robin, go to any heterosexual tomorrow and say, starting tomorrow morning, you're going to live your life as a homosexual. They're going to freak out. You go to any homosexual and say, starting tomorrow, you're going to live as a heterosexual. You go to any pedophile straight heterosexual. They're going to come unglued. And there are millions of pedophiles out there that are not, in fact, they may be child molesters, but they're not technically child molesters because they have not been convicted in a court of law. But they still have...
No.
You've
misunderstood what I'm saying. As a sex crimes prosecutor and as someone who has spent a lot of time analyzing this and looking at this, I'm not disagreeing with you. But to me, someone who's not convicted is still a child molester. Someone who is not, the definition of a pedophile for the purposes
of... They're different. Pedophile and child molester are different.
Wait, can I get my words out? Pedophilia, for the purposes, there's all kinds of words and verbiage out there. In order to be a pedophile, per definition, from the DSM-4, you must have been convicted. Do I think
that is not true.
Wait a second. You're absolutely wrong. Go look in the DSM-4.
No.
But wait. Let me finish my sentence, please. If I can get my sentence out to me. It doesn't matter whether you use the word pedophile, molester, predator, opportunist. To me, all those people are the same. To me, it's not I'm attracted. You are a pedophile if you consider it an orientation. That is what I'm saying. It's not an orientation. If you are, you can say, I have a preference and craving for drugs. Yes, you are a drug addict. You can call it whatever it is, but you are a drug addict. To me, Michael Jackson, convicted or not, was someone
right,
who
to you,
was
but I'm
attracted.
Talking politically correct terms, and I know you took Roy Hazelwood's class, and pedophilia is nothing but a sexual attraction towards children. If they go so far as to sexually assault a child, they are convicted in a court of law, and are convicted of that assault, then they are politically correct a child molester. But there are millions of pedophiles out there this sexual orientation towards children.
I will send you the DSM-4. We can agree to disagree. I'll send you the DSM-4.
But the bottom line is, ladies, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck...
I'm with you.
Thank you. Do not say that... That Michael Jackson was not convicted in a court of law, so therefore he
No, you're totally missing the point.
So wrong.
I'm agreeing
no,
with
no,
you.
No, no, no. I wasn't directing towards that. That's towards you, Robin. I was directing. I know you're on top of things because you're the bomb, and I love you. But I'm talking about the other media. Don't sit there and come out and say, well, don't call Michael Jackson a child molester because he wasn't convicted.
But the only thing that I have a question about
attraction towards children.
Okay, Robin, you get the last word on this one.
Thank you. My only question is honestly, you know, from the point of view of a prosecutor and looking at this case, to me, does it matter anymore what he was, really? I mean, yes, I do think about all the stuff from before. Yes, it does. But the guy's dead. It's on to find the other bad people, and those are the people that helped kill him.
Yeah. Well, no, that's true. And that's the big story here.
She's awesome.
That's the big story here.
And she's on TV. She deserves it.
Well, you know, I saw her and Mark Garagos on Larry King, and somebody asked a question about whether or not Jackson's nose fell off or if somebody's nose got it. And I couldn't believe it. And Robin actually almost burst out laughing, but the camera didn't stay on her long enough. And it's that kind of nonsense that's out there that's being reported. But the big story is the enabling, the malpractice, the criminal acts that, whether it's Michael Jackson or Jack Smith, anyone that's administered drugs, any sort of anesthesia or whatever that way, and the crime has been committed, let's hope they spend a lot of time in jail. Listen, ladies, our time is up. Robin, I want you to stay on the line. Stacey, thank you. You know Stacey Dietrich from Justice Interrupted. Go to her website.
Buy her hate mail there, and I'm just kidding.
Buy her books, and listen.
I know where you live, and I'm coming out there, so you better watch it.
Be safe in the weather out there, and we'll talk to you soon. Robin, I want you to stay on the line, okay?
Okay, right. Thank you.
You too. Have a great night. I love you both.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye, Stacey. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Ellen Magnus, and she'll be discussing the 21st Annual Crimes Against Children's Conference in Dallas, Texas. And Robin Sachs is one of the contributors to that conference. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, August 17th to the 20th in Dallas, Texas, will be the 21st Annual Crimes Against Children's Conference. There's a link on the show notes, so make sure and click it to check out the webpage there. Ellen Magnus is here. She's one of the organizers. And, of course, Robin Sachs, who is a regular contributor to this program, will be one of the presenters there. Let's start with Ellen. Tell us about the Crimes Against Children's Conference.
The conference will be held in Dallas, August 17th through 20th. As you said, it is our 21st annual conference. We're expecting more than 3,100 professionals from all around the world.
Wow. And the conference is presented by the Dallas Children's Advocacy Center and the Dallas Police Department, Ellen. And when you look at this, and we'll get to Robin in a minute, can you do anything better than helping kids talking about crimes against children? I think this is a big thing, and having 3,000 people there from, you know, across the country is a great thing. Tell us what we may see or what you would hear if you attended that conference.
So professionals who fight crimes against children will find everything from basic information about how to prosecute a case in court to mock trials, to how to investigate online crimes against children, a wide variety of workshops, national case studies, hands-on computer labs, really something for the beginner all the way through the very experienced law enforcement professional, prosecutor, child protective services worker, medical professional.
Are you getting lots of PR coverage? The media should be all over the story because it's so hugely important.
You know, we don't really get a lot of media coverage around this, unfortunately. We do, during the actual time of the conference, we do have media present. But leading up to it, since it is such a specialized area, not open to the general public, just open for professionals who fight crimes against children, doesn't get a lot of pickup other than the week of.
Well, there's a lot of police officers, a lot of organizations, law, whatever, that could contribute or be part of the conference. And, you know, shame on the media when they don't promote these things the way that they should. But Robin Sachs, when you look at, and you're going to be presenting at this conference, the internet and multimedia, television, you name it, it's out there. And as far as crimes against children, how big a part of that is this conference?
Well, the number one thing that conferences in general, and this conference particularly, has to offer professionals, besides all of the amazing speakers and all of the amazing resources, but it's really the opportunity to collaborate amongst people who are passionate about the same issues in protecting children as the other one is. And what's so nice about this particular conference is that this is probably, if it is probably the biggest conference in the United States, at least that I'm aware of. So, and again, it really reaches and has notoriety in law enforcement and for prosecutors and for people all over the country. And so if you were to pick one conference to go to, if your agency only had the budget to send you to one, the nice thing about Dallas is it's, you know, relatively centralized, at least in the middle of the country, sort of, even though it's in the south a bit. But it does give a lot of people opportunity to get there. And in terms of networking and meeting people, you just can't beat it. And that's so, so important because, as Ellen knows and as you know, Dana, the people who spend their life protecting children and people who prosecute these crimes, investigate these kinds of crimes, work on them in every capacity, find themselves that they live either in a very, very, very dark world, or they end up moving on to a different area. And the best thing to be able to curtail that darkness and be able to kind of reinvigorate and re-energize to be able to continue on is to really share with other people, collaborate, and lean on your pals and know who to call during those dark times during the rest of the year, and how you find those people is at this conference.
You know, Ellen, the conferences, education, training, cross-training, you name it, the big part of this is education. If we can get the police, the DAs, the social service people, the hospitals, health, you name it, to work together and to be all on the same page. Because when we hear about stories, we hear about cases where there are problems, whether it's the prosecution, whether it's the investigation itself or the examination of a victim, it's usually because of lack of communication. One agency does it this way, the other agency thinks that they can do it that way, and sadly, that still does happen somewhat. At this conference, I'm taking that you'll have policemen, lawyers, you name it, all in the same classroom together, correct?
That's right. That's actually a very unique feature of our conference. We do have, we are heavily law enforcement attended, so about 55% of our attendees are federal, state, and local level law enforcement professionals. We also have a very nice contingent of prosecutors, child protective services workers, therapists, medical professionals, and you're right, they all come together and learn from each other. One of the best ways they learn from each other is through case study presentations, and I know Robin is doing one of those, really bringing together a particular national case and talking about what went right, what went wrong, what can we do better next time.
You bet. It's the 21st Annual Crimes Against Children Conference. It will be held in the Hyatt Regency at Reunion, Dallas, Texas, again, August 17th to 20th, sponsored by the Dallas Children's Advocacy Center and one of the best police departments in North America, the Dallas Police Department. Thank you, Ellen.
My pleasure.
And thank you, Robin, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Dana, for always, you know, keeping it wild and with great issues and highlighting this such an important conference.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And that's it. That's tonight's show. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.